Hey folks, this is Simon Ward. Welcome to the High Performance Human Podcast. It's time for another episode where we are devoted to helping you achieve optimal human performance. Please check out my website, simonwardtriathloncoach.com, for all my latest blogs and send your questions to beth@thetriathloncoach.com. If you're not already a subscriber to the show, please go to simonward.podbean.com, where you can subscribe and make sure you don't miss any of our weekly episodes. Hey folks, welcome back. In last week's show, you may remember that sleep expert Nick Littlehales was explaining to us about sleep and some of the key sleep recovery indicators that he uses in his business. He finished off by answering one listener's question, which was all about why your mum knew best, and particularly why the hours of sleep before midnight are so valuable. In today's episode, Nick starts to work his way through all of the listener questions that we were sent prior to this conversation. So let's get on with those. So I'm looking at some of the other questions here, Nick. I'm looking at one from Paul. I keep waking up around between 4 and 5 a.m. after going to bed at 11:30. I'm training about 10 or 11 hours a week. Any advice? So what we're really saying, Paul, is, if I'm hearing you right, Nick, is it's okay to wake up between 4 and 5 a.m. It's entirely natural. Don't worry about it, because that's going to keep you awake for longer. Just turn over and just go back to sleep.
With Paul's world, I mean, obviously, there's lots of things missing, as we know, Sam. But all that's happening there, he's pushing the boundaries, right? Point of wake, off he goes, intensive exercise. He gets that. What happens? The brain kicks in and goes, right. So as soon as he stops, the brain kicks in and shoves him into deep sleep. Like behind the wheel of a car on a motorway. That's not your choice, right? So as soon as he gets that point, 11:30, he's pushing. He's pointing the brain in a particular direction, which is processing information. He's pushing. As soon as he stops that, the brain kicks in again and goes, right, compensation. He dumps him into sleep, deep sleep. He does a few cycles, and then it flicks him out. So there's nothing wrong with what he's doing. But as long as he understands what he's doing, that's okay. If he doesn't understand what he's doing, then that can create an addictive behavior. So the question he's asking is, can I continue to do this? Yes, you can, as long as you understand what you're doing.
So if he wakes up at 4:30 and he's conscious of the fact he might get up to get a glass of water or go to the bathroom, and then he comes back to sleep, and let's say he's getting up at 6:30, he could lie there, he could relax, he could try and do some deep breathing exercise. He might fall back to sleep if he needs it, or he may just lie there. I would guess that if he doesn't need it, and his body's telling him he doesn't need it, he'll lie there and he'll be conscious of what's going on. He may just be dozing. He's still relaxing, so it's still a recovery period, isn't it? It's a sleep recovery period.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's sort of, you know, those CRPs, those snooze naps. It's just like, so, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, bang, I'm awake. I got some deep sleep. If you wear your tracker, whoop, it probably shows you that you went in about 20 minutes deep sleep. Because in any 10 or 20 hour period of sleep, you're only going to get 15, 20% of deep sleep. So it's not like big chunks. So that's all that's happening with him. And if he just balanced, maybe, if we had a chance to coach him, Zane. Mm-hmm. Then we'd probably just look at an early evening CRP just to balance what he's doing in that third phase.
CRP, by the way, just for those people who didn't pick up on it, compressed recovery period. Is that right?
Controlled recovery period,
right.
He's waking early. He's pushing it. But 30 minutes or less, late afternoon, early evening, that 30 minute will protect the third phase of his day, because he's going to sleep late, he's still pushing the intensity. Nobody wants to take him from that. But we also need to know he's going to be deep dived into deep sleep straight away by his brain. Then he's going to be woken early. And he won't get back to sleep after that. Right? He can do whatever he wants. You know, he can chill out, listen to this, watch David Attenborough movies. He won't get back to it. It's his 24-hour polyphasic approach that will cope with that. Right?
So a very similarly linked question there from Rachel Pearson. She said, any tips for helping you get back to sleep? I can get sleep, no problem, but find myself waking up around 3 a.m. and all sorts of thoughts go racing through my mind. How can I settle back to sleep instead of worrying about a race or other things?
Well, the first thing you know how complex this is, Simon. And I don't want to make it complex, but this rolling 24 hours. So the deep sleep stages reveal between 10 to 2 a.m. So if you wake up and you feel wide awake, the first thing you should register is a positive thing, that you've probably enjoyed deep sleep.
Right.
Don't think of it as a negative. You wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock, and suddenly the birds are singing half an hour later. Huh?
Yep.
This is the circadian process. And anybody who's been involved with lockdown, suddenly these birds start singing in chronological order. You know, certain birds start singing at 3 o'clock, then 3:30. We've heard it all before. It's like the orchestra of the lamp. Yes. And we go, wow, we're waking up on it. So if you wake up at that time and you feel absolutely wide awake, put it down as a positive point. You've got deep sleep. Like your mum said, before 12 or just after 12, you've got those deep sleep stages. The rest of it is important. Light sleep and stuff like that is important, but they are recovery stages. The deep sleep is the stuff you want.
So actually, if we consider things, something like reading a book as part of one of your controlled recovery periods, then if you're awake at 3 a.m. and you can't get back to sleep, you can still continue with the recovery period by reading your book in a quiet place, yeah?
Absolutely. Because sleep onset, as you call it, is if you're wide awake at that time and you feel like, obviously you don't want to start your day like you normally do, right? Because that creates unharmony with sunrise and sunset. But you feel wide awake, what can you do? Take advantage of that time. And the principle is the more you follow a 24-hour rolling process, you create more time for yourself. You create more productivity time for yourself. You're able to put things in place in that 24-hour cycle. So I could be ironing a shirt. I could be making a nice lunch. I could be preparing my bike at 3 o'clock in the morning. Why not? But the onset of sleep is, as long as you have this relationship with your brain, you know this, son. As long as you have this relationship, your brain will put you back into a sleep state if it wants to. So as long as you don't push the boundaries too far and try and take it to places it doesn't want to be, if you keep it in a nice place, it will reveal itself all day long, every other week.
I'm just thinking as you're talking about this, Nick, about animals. I don't have any pets, but we've had dogs, and you know, dogs will race around, but then they'll lie down and they'll maybe go to sleep for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. Then they just listen to their bodies, don't they? They relax. They lie there in the sun. They go to sleep at the time we go to sleep because we're forcing them to settle down at 10 and get up at 6. But who knows what they're doing in the middle of the night? I have friends who talk about their dog running around the house, and they get worried about it.
I always find that a fascinating coaching concept. Funny you should mention. And it's not based in science, and it's not based in our worlds of human performance in sport. But I always love the fact that, you know, you've got a puppy, and they tend to run around all the time. But as soon as you stop, they stop. As soon as you start, they start. Mm-hmm. Are they actually ever asleep? No. So they're kind of constantly in this polyphasic, circadian, natural sleeping pattern that go, yes, stop, go, up, back. And yet they seem to be unaffected by everything else. They seem to be able to have high energy. I mean, just going off a tangent, my family's just bought a little cock spaniel poo, whatever it's called.
Cockapoo.
Yeah. And this little thing, you know, called Luna, is like, you know, hardly any bones and flesh. They just eat pellets and stuff like that, and they don't hydrate and all that stuff. But this thing run around like nuts 24/7, fetching balls, meeting people. But whenever all the humans stop, bang. But you just do that, it's up. So they're polyphasic sleeping like mad. They're doing stuff like that. And I think it's a really great relationship to the natural circadian rhythms of the day, and puppies and dogs and things, and, you know, cats wander out in the middle of the night. When do they sleep? And I think it's a really nice relationship that we all have with this performance process. And I think we're not trying to move ourselves in, but the real difference to all of this is if you can find your natural rhythm, you know, whether it's a dog, it's a cat, it's this, it's you as a human being, it's you as a person, it's you as your dynamics, who you sleep with, where you sleep, those KSRIs. If you can put those things all into some context, you can put the counterproductive things to one side. Mm. You can focus your mind on the other things. And if you get to that particular place, wow.
Wow. So we have another question here. I can't sleep more than 7 hours, regardless of when I go to bed. If I go early, then I wake up early. How can I get a bit more sleep, as I'm currently training a lot? But it sounds like if he goes to bed early, wakes up early, he's probably getting the deep sleep period between 10 and 2, and the rest of it is rest. And so he could nap during the day. He could just take some quiet time away from his computer. He could go for a walk in the woods, whatever. It doesn't really matter, as long as he's really accessing that. I think what I seem to be getting from you here is if you can access that deep sleep period between 10 and 2, that's the most important thing. And then whatever else happens, it's about listening to your body and then taking what it needs at that time. Sometimes you'll need more, sometimes you'll need less, but it's about listening to your body.
I have no answer to that question, Sam. That was a beautiful answer to the question.
I'm a good student, Nick. So just to go on to that then, Sam Cordner asked, is there a maximum recommended period of sleep? So again, being a good student, I would say if you need more, your body will probably tell you you need more. And if you don't need more, you won't be able to go to sleep. You'll just, you know, you'll get what your body tells you it needs. Just don't force it not to have any sleep, I would say.
That's a good answer as well, but I would just caveat that for one.
Yeah, fine.
24-hour process. You need 30-odd% of that in some sort of recovery. That's 8 hours. That's where the 8 hours come
in,
from.
In recovery, not sleep, in controlled recovery periods and sleep.
So sleep is really important. You know, so within a 24-hour clock, we put a clock on that, Simon, as you know. It's a 24-hour process. So within that period, you need 33-odd% of that in hibernation, in recovery, in being sort of semi-paralyzed to rejuvenate the bodily functions. That's what the brain is trying to do. That's what sleep is about. So you need around 30-odd% of that 24-hour clock, right? So that equals 8-odd hours. So within your 24-hour process, you do need to be in recovery for 8-odd hours. But how that reveals itself is what we've been talking about. So not in just one block, but you do need this, right? So
okay.
Nobody's indicating you sleep less, but what you do need is to make sure that if I'm just taking a distracted break, you know, taking Simon's hand and just walking down by the river just for 2 minutes, that's part of my 8 hours. Right? So you need to understand that recovery is really important. It does take up 30-odd% of your day, a third of your life. It does take up 30-odd% of that 24-hour process. You can't ignore it. You can polyphasically push it. You can challenge it for certain periods and do a lot less and push the boundaries. But you always need to have a nice reflection that in every 24-hour rolling process, I've got around 8 hours worth of my time.
We talked about the sleep stages earlier, and you've mentioned them a couple of times. So we've got the deep sleep. We've got REM sleep, which is, I think, the dreamy sleep. That's stage three. And then we've got the other two that are above that. You mentioned around 15 to 20% of your sleeping time should be deep sleep. Is there any way that you can manipulate those stages of sleep? Can you try to enhance on it or make sure that you get more deep sleep or more REM sleep? Or is it what does the body just take what happens naturally?
You're asking some deep and meaningful conversations.
I'm not. My listeners are.
I mean, it's sort of, how can I put that in context? It's like I have a nice relationship with my brain, right? My brain is completely synchronized to the circadian rhythms of sun going around the planet. It loves hydration, obviously, for the brain. It loves nutrition. It loves stuff. It loves hormone production and a balance to that rhythm, right?
Yep.
So when I wake up in the morning, I just have, you know, my imaginary friend, my brain. And that's my important person in my life. So get light, do this. So everything we do from the first 90 minutes. So the point is, if I wander through that process going, man, we're going to sleep at 10 o'clock at night. You give me two 90-minute cycles. Take me into deep sleep. Then we'll wake up and we'll be active and we'll do this stuff. It's kind of having that nice relationship with your brain. To let's grab a few deep, you know, those wonderful deep sleep cycles, those REM cycles. If I can take you to that point and you give me two cycles, which could be 90 minutes or two 90 minutes before 12, like mom said, or just after 12, if you have that nice relationship with this process, what you're doing is you're revealing recovery when you and your brain know it's available. So that could be midday. That could be the first 90 minutes of your day. That could be early evening before the second phase, of the third phase of the day. That could be between 10 and 12 or 12 and 2. If we're going to sleep between 3 and 6:30, that's all about light sleep. So maybe we don't put so much emphasis on that. That's just a bit of light recovery. Mm. So it's kind of like this deep recovery. So I think like in any sort of exercise program you're ever going to follow, it's like you're trying to achieve this, you're trying to achieve that. And within that 24-hour process, it becomes a really nice relationship with, let's just get a couple of cycles in between 10 and 12 times. Because I've got a podcast with Simon Ward at 1 o'clock. And then we're going to do this in the morning. Simon wants to take me on a bike ride. Okay. And then we've got to do this and we've got to do that. And suddenly this whole sort of sleep thing, crazy enough to answer your question, is you reveal these moments, right? These optimum REM periods where literally, if you go into REM sleep stage or non-REM sleep stage or deep sleep stage, it means I can walk into your bedroom, Simon, tonight and play with your hair, play with your glasses, and you will not even know I'm there because you're in a paralyzed state. Me and my brain have put you into that place. You have no idea. It's like kids in deep sleep. You can't even tell where they're breathing. But in a light sleep stage, I wouldn't even get through, you know, Nottingham on the way to Yorkshire. You know, it's that sort of whole concept of if you're in a light sleep stage, your brain is active and reactive. In a deep sleep stage, there's lots of little things that need to be in place.
So maybe now's a good time to, you talked a bit about pre and post sleep routines. And when you came to Loughborough, you talked about some of the things you could do in that sort of maybe 90 minutes before you go to bed. I know you talked about what happens in the morning as well, and that sets you up. So maybe as a pre-sleep routine, we ought to start with a post-sleep routine, because you said that what you do first thing in a day sets you up for later in the day. So maybe that's part of it. So what things would you do in the first 60 to 90 minutes after waking up that would get you started on the right path towards having a good day and also get you started on the right path to having a good night's sleep?
Well, one of the first things that you have to remember about starting your day is about serotonin, and that's about light. And you need to have a much higher level of light exposure in the mornings than you ever could think about. It's 10,000 lux. That's the average for a human being. If you spent a lot of time outside, that's what your exposure would be. So there's all lots of little tricks we do, which you know about. And I could see you in your room right now, looking around. So that's our natural exposure, is average of 10,000 lux. There we go.
I've got, so you, when you came to the talk, you mentioned this thing called the lux meter, which I've got on my phone here. And so I should be out. Here we are, light meter lux. Now, I'm standing in quite a bright room. I moved early because I felt like the sunlight was too much on the screen. Stood here right now, it's giving me 600 lux. That's not enough, is it? And I'm in a bright room.
So you asked me a question, now you're answering the question. Move back a meter.
Back a meter, over here.
Yeah, by the telly.
Yep, it's gone on to advert now. There we go. 700.
700. So you've got a window somewhere in there?
Over the other side, yeah.
Well, walk over there. It's quite light in your room. You've got skylights, yeah. Haven't you?
Yeah, 19,000, right? The 2-3 meters difference. 19,000, because the sun's coming through this room now, so through this window.
What about the skylights up there?
If I stand here underneath them, 5,000.
Five what?
5,000.
Uh-huh. Go back to your desk. I think, yeah, Simon, a lot of people think that we've staged this and, you know, But the reality is there is a difference between melatonin and serotonin world. And it's all about the pineal gland off the front of your brain. It's through the eyelids. You can go through the ear canals if you want to. But this relationship with light, blue blocker glasses, you know, blue light's bad for you. Blue light is amazing. And as this human journey has gone on, and we've wandered around this planet, and we come inside and come outside, and sport is very much outside, but it's also inside. But what you can suddenly realize very, very quickly is that the amount of time you should be exposed to 10,000 lux on average through the first and second phase of the day. If you're not, you're in melatonin land.
And how long is that, Nick? How long should you be exposed? How many minutes?
It's kind of like an average exposure. So maybe every, you know, as you would expect, every 90 minutes, expose yourself to 10,000 lux to try and keep that balance up in the first phase and the second phase of that. And you know, people looking at this might think we're making it up, but it's only a simple. We get very scientific with light, you know, circadian rhythms in training grounds, creating this light, dark, and temperature shift. We get very scientific about all the levels of the light. But in this particular case, all you have to do is realize that your exposure to this is so low. You know, I'm talking to you right now in front of, you know, you've brought it up, haven't you? I think it's really important for people to understand that it's just a camera on my phone. And where I'm standing with you right now, the difference, right?
Yeah.
If anyone's watching this and you've done it, haven't you? The difference between those two movements is just hundreds here.
Right. So Nick stood in the middle of his kitchen now with the little lux meter. What's the score that you get there, Nick?
At this moment in time, I've got 1,500.
Right. And when you move closer to me now, closer to the computer, and you buy the window more?
20,000.
Yeah. Now, when we talk about this, that's you mentioned at Loughborough, that's quite important. If you go to a presentation, for instance, so obviously right now in lockdown, we're not going to any of these in-person type of presentations. It's the difference between sitting in the middle of the room at your desk and listening to the presentation versus choosing the table that's next to the window so you get a bit of light coming in. But also, when you get the opportunity to have a coffee break, instead of standing inside chatting to people, get the opportunity to go outside and have 2 minutes out in natural daylight. And that's great at this time of year when the sun's higher and the light's brighter. During the winter, what do you advise for people who don't get that. Do you recommend these SAD lamps for people in the morning to get some early exposure to sunlight or to bright light?
You know, you mentioned your workshop, son, and there was a lady sitting in the corner by the window, and she raised the question, so what do? They're not SAD lamps. They're called seasonal affective disorder lamps.
Okay.
If you know, my journey along this sleep thing has been redefining what sleep means. They're not SAD lamps. They're not seasonal affective disorder lamps. They are simply a way to manipulate your light exposure through the seasonal changes of the postcode you live in, called the UK or the US, wherever it is. So you live in a world of daylight saving time. You need to have a light exposure process going on. It's not about seasonal affective disorder. That's sad and that's negative. You just need to know that you move from the summer to the winter, to the autumn, through to the spring. You change the clocks. You change your exposure to light. So currently we're having this conversation and there's loads of sunlight. It happens to be, you know, late in the afternoon. It'll still be there. But when it comes to October, November, it's gone. So it's not about, I think the whole perception about sleep is redefining. This is not about seasonal affective disorder. This is not about that change. That's how you balance this process. So as soon as I get anywhere near September, and the light starts to shift, I know I'm going to change the clocks in October. I start to bring light therapy tools into my life because I'm not going out there riding bikes with sun. That's changing. We're moving from casseroles to, instead of spritzers and salads, we're moving to casseroles and staying in and Netflixing. We're doing all these sort of things. I don't want to be out in my park at this time. All of those, but don't forget the light. And as you know, we can just bring stuff in.
Ah, is that the human charger?
Yeah, whatever it is, you can just bring something. Don't go into seasonal affective disorder.
Okay. Okay.
We don't talk about seasonal affective disorder when you go into spring and summer. Do we?
No.
It's all positive. It's all about light and challenging stuff and doing things and sport and summer. They only talk about it in the winter.
So we need to start off the day. Get some more light in, delay your tech startup a little bit. Get through your sort of natural human movements and then get your day going. What about the other end of the day then? Because I've seen and hear about some behaviors that people have that seem to have a negative impact on their ability to get to sleep. What actions can we take that might have a positive impact on our ability to fall asleep quickly and get into that deep sleep at 10?
I think it's all about stopping worrying about sleep time, you know, and if you wake up in the morning and you haven't had a good night's sleep, you woke up too early, all this sort of stuff, you put that in context and just start, you know. Lots of distracted breaks, plenty of light, go through those seasons, and you get to the end of your day. So maybe you've done this, maybe you've done that, maybe you've done this, maybe you've done that. You put those into context and maybe shift your sleep pattern accordingly. So you might just get 3 cycles tonight and back it up with a midday cycle tomorrow. What I think the whole process is enjoy your day. Enjoy your 24/7. Push it as far as you want to go. Be mindful of this natural human recovery process. Don't restrict yourself, because that's not the way the world is. But just always be mindful that if you take something from the day, you've got to give it back. So if I nick a cycle because I want to spend time with you, son, riding my bike tonight into the sunset, having a pizza, having a cold beer, you know, enjoying the summer. You know, that's not going to happen in the winter. So all the time I'm trying to think, I can nick those moments, but if I take them to enjoy my life at the full, I need to put them back, and that just might be a 30-minute cycle midday.
So if for instance, you know, some of the things...
You know what I mean.
Well, some of the things you told us in Loughborough were to get tech down, so switching off your tech a bit earlier. There's a lot of stuff about not looking at your iPads and your computers in the half hour before you go to bed because of the blue light exposure. Are you saying that that's not true, or that we should be taking heed of that advice?
The light exposure is the wrong thing to worry about, because you can get shields on your tech, and you should enjoy blue light. Right? Blue light, as far as technology is concerned, is just a nonsense. Right? You can protect yourself from all that sort of stuff.
It's not a nonsense, but you can protect yourself. So you need some blue light blocking glasses. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe you can use blue blocking glasses. You can have screen shield. I was just coaching somebody today from Australia. We have screen shields on all their devices. Phones, you know, laptops. They just protect them from the blue light. But the blue light is so insignificant from this tech. So okay. The thing is fake news taking you off in different directions, you know, all that sort of, it's about the information that you're collecting. Right? So we're not really interested in this blue light stuff, right? In that sense. Yes, we can control that for fun. It's about just, you know, engaging with stuff that continually exposes, not my generation, your generation and below you. You know, can you trust this stuff?
Okay. Well, what about things like training late on in the afternoon then, or in the evening? I mean, that's going to raise your metabolism. So eating quite late, that's going to raise your metabolism through your digestive system. So are those things that we would want to try to avoid if we want to get a good night's sleep? Or are you saying that if we do train late on, then what we do is just shift our sleeping time back a bit to take account of that?
You know, sometimes, Simon, it's so easy for me to interject, but the answer is absolutely as you say. You just shift it, right? Whether you're a morning type or a nighttime chronotype, whether you're Cristiano Ronaldo or you're Chris Froome or Bradley Wiggins, you shift it. So you can actually be training at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Okay. That was a question from Milan Dora, who says if he only has time to train in the evening, and I guess that will be it, wouldn't it? If that's all you've got, that's what you have to make the most of, and then adjust your sleep accordingly and catch up later.
There's no point telling, you know, Chris Froome, Bradley Wiggins, whatever, Usain Bolt, to train at, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning. If their natural chronotype, their natural rhythm, their schedules, you know, they have to perform in Olympic finals at certain times in the day. Liverpool has been a great example. Manchester City has been a great example. All of these factors come into play. So you manage it to say, there's no reason why you can't do that at that time, as long as you've managed it in there.
Okay. You and I touched on the menopause subject, and we have a few questions here. One of them touched on tips for menopausal women waking around 3 a.m. and struggling to get back to sleep. So can I assume that it doesn't matter whether you're menopausal or whether you're just waking up at 3 a.m., they're both the same. Yeah. And therefore, as long as you're getting that deep sleep in, it doesn't really matter. And actually, you should just take the next phase that comes after it between 4 a.m., say, and when the alarm goes off, as just a controlled recovery period.
I have to say again, Simon.
Okay. I'm listening. The other question here was, I've tried magnesium oil spray on my feet, but wondering if there's anything else I can do. Does magnesium help as a supplement for sleep?
Magnesium's great.
Yeah. And does it, is it, is it important which form you take it in? I mean, I take a magnesium pill every day as a little capsule, but would spray be any better?
Sort of. You know, jumping back to the first question, the menopausal lady, you know, at the end of the day, we all wake up at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, just get over it, balance it in, polyphasic approach, you'll be fine. If you want any further help, just give me a call.
Okay.
Magnesium's great, as you know. Potassium's great, as you know. You combine those things together, it's a massive muscle and joint recovery thing. So you can get potassium, magnesium, you know, bananas, fine. But there's more potassium, magnesium in the skin of a banana than in the flesh, as you know, son. So banana tea and things like that. You look at Cherry Active and Montmorency cherries, they produce potassium, magnesium together. They also produce melatonin, which is a natural thing. They're all good stuff, and that's what's most used in most places. When you look at supplements, you want to be really careful. They're not placebos to, you know, a healthy, balanced diet, a healthy, balanced approach. So if you do bring those things in, they're okay. But there's loads of magnesium and potassium in a good diet. Right? You know, organic bananas, chop things off, da da da. There's loads of good stuff in everywhere you go. I think when you start looking for melatonin supplements, sometimes you have to go into these areas because sport is about challenges. You know, you can't just go, oh, the Olympic final's not there. You have to override these things, and that's what coaches are all about. But it's in a balance, in the context. Melatonin stuff, I would be more aligned to, if you need to introduce melatonin through a spray onto your tongue to help you sleep, then I'd advise you to connect with Simon tomorrow. If you need to, you know, jump into sleeping tablets or whatever, or introduce more magnesium, because I would just jump into your space tomorrow.
What about when you're traveling through time zones and you've got that jet lag thing and you're trying
light.
Just more light. Yeah.
Light. That's the one it is. Okay. Whenever you look into this, you mentioned very early on in this conversation, when you travel east to west and west to east, there's a different thing between time zones. It's all about your natural circadian rhythm, your postcode where you were born. Right? And when you look into that, it's about your resetting your circadian clock. So whenever you do it, you can look at food clocks, you can look at this, you can look at that. You know, the one thing that does it is light.
Okay. We had one. I know you've got. It's nearly time for us to finish, Nick. But I've got a couple more questions that we had. The coffee and caffeine and the half life. You know, somebody's having four coffees each morning between 6 a.m. and noon. Is this going to affect him? I mean, I'm not going to try and answer this one. Your thoughts on caffeine, Nick.
We know the answer.
Well, I know. I mean, there's a half life, but if you finish by 12, generally it seems like it's out of your system enough to go to sleep. It doesn't affect me generally if I finish by 12. But then there are some people who can get away with drinking double espressos before they go to bed because they're the people who's genetically are not switched on to caffeine. They don't benefit from it.
All I would say as far as caffeine is concerned, because you know from a cyclist, it's part of the culture.
In a morning, yeah, not before I go to bed.
Do it, have a little break, a little coffee. Caffeine is just that sort of natural thing that goes on around in our world, and it's fine in context. The one thing you don't want to do with it, from my experience, is go above and beyond the limits and beyond. So if you like 1,000 milligrams to midday and then stop, you've got a down downside to this, a big downside. So that can affect your evening over there. So I like you either no caffeine, which is extremely difficult in the modern world because it's in painkillers, it's everywhere. Right? So either you adopt a no caffeine rule or you adopt a nice balanced rule. And you know, whether this means anything to your audience or to you, I know that if I take 100 milligrams of caffeine on, in 3 hours' time, with a half-life of 6 or 7 hours, it'll be half that.
Yep.
So I can up that a little bit. I can keep that balance going throughout my 24 hours. So if I would like 150 milligrams in my system as part of my overall performance thing, like a bike and helmet, if I want 150 milligrams, I keep it consistent every 3 hours, 24/7. I don't have the highs and the lows. And when you ever move into sports, you know, into that elite world, and then just go whack it up, drop it down. I don't want the highs and lows. So I think if you, as you all know from your world, if you're going to use caffeine, whether it's, you know, outdoors, riding bikes, whatever, it's a little bit of coffee culture, espresso, all those cultures that go on around the world. If you're going to use it, just keep it consistent. And keep it low level, but consistent. So, as you would know, you know, just before a time trial with Garen Thomas, Bradley Wiggins, Chris Froome, just lift them up with a nice little espresso. Let it drift off. Let it come back. And let it reveal itself within that time trial. Not exaggerate that time trial or anything like that. So when you look at it, it's just, I absolutely detest people who up their caffeine levels and then stop it at lunchtime.
Okay.
And then they drift into this period of time where there's no caffeine and you're dropping off that 6 or 7 hour timeline and the brain's trying to work it out what's going on. So it's either nothing or balance it.
Okay. Well, one last question then. Just about everybody that's listening will have done an event or a race at some point and experienced that sleeplessness the night before. Now, I remember reading that Steve Redgrave was notorious for not being able to sleep the nights before. And so rather than lying there worrying about it, he just didn't bother sleeping. He knew he'd be able to race the next day. He'd won plenty of medals and championships around the world, and he knew he'd be able to catch up later. So, and I've always understood that if the days preceding your event were full of good sleep, it didn't really matter what happened the night before. Is how much truth is there in that? And should we not be worrying about it the night before?
You're asking lots of deep and meaningful questions.
That's the last one, I promise you.
Okay. I think the principle with this is, the answer is yes. Right? When you get to a certain point, right, you can plan it, you can train it, you can do your stuff, right? But when the adrenaline, the cortisol, the anxiety, the stress, will you do this, will you do it, is off the charts. The most important thing is just to, you know, maybe wander into the garden and talk to your grandkids or have a barbecue or do anything other than that, because you're just putting more pressure on it. Mm. And the worst thing you want to do is start taking drugs and sleeping tablets and to try and affect that. So when you get to that particular place, the 24 hours before a major event is about fun. You've made it. You've done it. You are ready. You are invigorated. You are about to do that sort of stuff. So you concentrate on those things. And I think, you know, as you know, I'm getting older as the day goes by. But, you know, with Steve Redgrave, he was like, we've done it. Done it. Don't even try and sleep. Let's go out and rave. Let's go and listen to music. Let's just go and smash it, because the only way you're going to get across that line is if you're completely invigorated with life. It's not about your training program. It's not about your nutrition program. The only way, Steve, you're going to get across that line with those guys is if you're listening to stuff that just takes you to another level, not your nutrition stuff. Like that. And I think that's where human performance differs from loads of things, is sometimes that's not the right thing to do. Yeah? And you can see that all the time.
Okay, so let's not worry about it the night before. That's the bottom line, Jack Hart. Good question, because it's affected us all. Just don't worry about it the night before. You'll fall asleep eventually, and then you can race the next day and sleep it off afterwards. Nick Little-Hales, we've almost broken the record today. A shade under 2 hours. That's been great. Thanks for being gracious enough to answer all the questions. With humour as well as knowledge. So I appreciate that. I really do. It's been lovely to catch up with you. Thank you for sharing the time.
Listeners, can I ask you one final question?
Yep.
How are you sleeping these days?
I'm sleeping well, thank you. Yeah. I don't worry about it anymore. Where can people find out about you, Nick? What are the best places?
Sportsleepcoach.com. That's sportsleepcoach.com.
Yes.
We have this natural attitude to providing loads of free content. Videos, YouTube, this, Instagram, Twitter. Just chucking it out there as much as we possibly can, including podcasts with Sir Simon Ward.
If only.
We have crazy things like you can just schedule a call and talk to me whenever you want on our website. It's free. I think the whole dynamics of this whole sleep and recovery and performance thing is I would just like to advise everybody, just don't even go into, 2021 without at least engaging in this area. It might sound a bit strange. It's not in your DNA to talk to a sleep coach or Simon or whatever. But I can tell you now that the key to success for 2021 is about recovery. And I don't just say that with irrelevance. I say that with a lot of knowledge and a lot of power for everybody involved. Do not go into 2021 without understanding your ability to recover humanly in a natural way. It's so natural. It's so easy. It doesn't cost a thing. You don't have to pay us to do anything. Just engage.
Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do, Nick. We'll put all of those links, and you may be sorry that you asked all these people to engage. You're probably going to get a lot of calls now. I hope you do.
Well, as long as they're like you, Simon, I'll be fine.
Okay, listen, Nick Little-Hales, thanks so much again. It's been a pleasure to catch up with you, and let's not leave it so long next time.
Okay. Love you, mate.
Take care. All the best, Nick.
All right. Cheers.
Right, then, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks again for listening. As always, I appreciate that you have plenty of choice out there in podcast land, so it does mean an awful lot to me when you come back regularly. If you enjoyed the podcast, please could you hop onto iTunes or Podbean and leave a rating and a comment if you can. Apparently, it's really good for the ratings, although to be absolutely honest with you, I have no idea how they work these things out. If you like the way I roll and you find some synergy with my approach to life and sport, maybe be interested in joining my SWAT Inner Circle training group. If you are, please just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com for more details. You can also use that email address to ask for my special free gift, which I have for you, which are my top 25 tips on how to be a high-performance human. Okay, that's all for this week. I'll be back next week with another great guest. So for now, enjoy the rest of your week.